shelves in hardware stores, sifting through the nuts and bolts of life. Joe Souchere.
I just got a good tip from the chief offsite correspondent. Instead of saying, I don't know what the temperature is supposed to be, I should say, that's what the temperature is supposed to be.
Oh, whatever it is.
73. That's what it's supposed to be.
Right.
I didn't give enough tip of the cap, if any. I don't think I gave any, to the Supreme Court siding with an Asian rock group called the Slants. Remember that about 10 days ago?
I do recall.
The Supreme Court ruled, well, it would have been last Monday, that a federal trademark law banning offensive names is unconstitutional, siding with a rock band whose name had been deemed racially disparaging by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. In an 8-0 ruling, the court determined the law's so-called disparagement clause violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment. The case centered on an Oregon-based Asian-American band called The Slants, which was denied a trademark because its name was considered offensive. The band countered that the 70-year-old law at issue violates free speech rights, and Justice Samuel Alito, in the court's opinion, agreed. The commercial market is well-stocked with merchandise that disparages prominent figures and groups, and the line between commercial and non-commercial speech is not always clear, as this case illustrates. If affixing the commercial label permits the suppression of any speech that may lead to political or social volatility, free speech would be endangered, he wrote. God, I love the way these guys write.
Mm-hmm.
The victory for the band could... Here's what I like about it. Well, I'll get to it after this. The victory for the band, the Slants, could have broader implications and be welcome news for the Washington Redskins, embroiled in its own legal fight over the team's name. The trademark office canceled the team's lucrative trademarks in 2014 after finding the word Redskins is disparaging to Native Americans. At issue in the Slants case was a law that prohibits registration of trademarks that may disparage persons, living or dead, institutions, beliefs, or national symbols. A trademark confers certain legal benefits, including the power to sue competitors that infringe upon that trademark. Slants founder Simon Tam said his goal was to reclaim a derisive slur and transform it into a badge of ethnic pride. But the trademark office said a term can be disparaging even when used in a positive light. A federal appeals court had sided with the band, ruling that the law violates the First Amendment. Alito cautioned in his opinion that the government still has an interest in preventing speech expressing ideas that offend, but he suggested the clause in question was too sweeping. The clause reaches any trademark that disparages any person, group, or institution. It applies to trademarks like the following: down with racist, down with sexist, down with homophobes. It is not an anti-discrimination clause. It is a happy talk clause. In this way, it goes much further than is necessary to serve the interest asserted. Lee Rowland, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, which had supported the ban, called the ruling a major victory for the First Amendment. Here's why I like it. I think it's a direct rebuke of the declining academy. I think the heads of so-called higher learning institutions have to be aware of this ruling and realize that they've been getting away with censorship on campuses merely because some kid might be offended at the presence of a conservative speaker, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This was great. I tip my hat to the Supreme Court. They've been coming out swinging on a lot of, and they've been hitting a lot of home runs. How about this one?
Okay.
The Supreme Court ruled yesterday that Missouri may not exclude a church school from a program that funds playground resurfacing, finding that discrimination based on religious identity violates the Constitution. The Playground Scrap Tire Surface Material Grants Program provides grants to schools that resurface their playgrounds with material made from recycled tires. For years, the state disqualified church-run schools under a provision of the Missouri Constitution providing that no money shall ever be taken from the public treasury directly or indirectly in aid of any church, sect, or denomination of religion.
Okay.
Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Missouri contends that reading violates its federal constitutional right to free exercise of religion, forcing it to choose between its faith and its eligibility for the program. The opinion by Chief Justice John Roberts stopped short of the wholesale redefinition of church-state separation that religious advocates supporting the case had wanted. Chief Justice Roberts wrote in a footnote that the court did not address religious uses of funding or other forms of discrimination apart from the playground program. That footnote exposed the court's stark divisions regarding the religious clauses. Two conservative justices, Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch, explicitly rejected the Roberts footnote, even while agreeing with his broader decision in favor of the church. The Constitution guarantees the free exercise of religion, not just the right to inward belief or status, Gorsuch wrote. Apart from the footnote, Gorsuch and Thomas joined the Roberts opinion, which had the full votes of Justices Anthony Kennedy, Samuel Alito, and Elena Kagan. If I can take a civilian attempt to interpret it, I think they're saying the money that would be coming to you in terms of tire scraps has nothing to do with your proselytizing your faith. We're not,
right.
You're not receiving the public money in order to enforce your religious views on other people. You're receiving the public money because it's a playground program for kids who apparently will be less injury prone if they fall down on tire scraps rather than asphalt.
Right.
Justice Stephen Breyer agreed with the result on the playground subsidy, but wrote separately to stress that he viewed the decision applying only to a general program designed to secure or improve the health and safety of children, leaving other kinds of public benefits for another day. Two liberals dissented, with Justice Sonia Sotomayor signaling her distress by reading her opinion from the bench. History shows that the religious clauses separate the public treasure from religious coffers as one measure to secure the kind of freedom of conscience that benefits both religion and government, she wrote, joined by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Now you know what they're going to hear? I got curious. How do they determine what cases they hear?
I'm not sure who determines
that. They get 10,000 applications a year.
Right.
I looked it up. Not just any case can be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court. A case must involve an issue of federal law or otherwise fall within the jurisdiction of federal courts. A case that involves only an issue of state law or parties within a state will likely stay within a state court system, where that state's Supreme Court would be the last step. And then it goes on to say, if you decide to appeal to the Supreme Court, the next step is to prepare a petition for certiorari. This is the document the court will read in order to decide to hear a case. In that document, you will include a history of the case, the basic facts, and the important legal questions that your case presents. And four judges have to sign on and say, yeah, we want to take this.
Okay.
Then they got to take it. Your opponent will also have a chance to file a response, and other interested parties may file briefs in support or against the petition. Your file will then go to a pool of Supreme Court clerks who will review all of the documents, summarize them for the justices, and include a recommendation on whether to take the case. The justices then make a final decision. If they decide to hear a case, they will issue a writ of certiorari. I can't... C-E-R...
It's like Johnny Camareri.
Certiorari. Every year, the court receives about 10,000 petitions for certiorari, but only hears 80 of them. Well, no one
that's
really...
That's a good club, Joe.
It's a hell of a club.
It really is.
While no one really knows why some cases get heard, but others do not, the Supreme Court has several factors that it considers when deciding what cases to hear. Conflict of law, the case must be important, it might just appeal to the justices' interests, and the court hears cases when lower courts disregard past Supreme Court decisions. Well... let's take up their next case when we return.
Here's a man who spends hours in hardware stores sifting through the nuts and bolts of life, Joe Soucheray.
Okay, the Supreme Court is going to take up the case of a baker.
Got my attention.
In Denver, who refused, citing his religious prohibitions, refused to make a wedding cake for a couple of guys.
Okay.
And personally, I would have taken their money.
Their money is as green as anybody else.
And if that's violating something in my particular faith, I'm not going to worry about it. Right. If that kept me out of heaven, the hell
I think my priest would say, you go ahead and take the money.
The U.S. Supreme Court, just a minute. Well, let me get this.
Okay.
Jake?
Hey, Joe.
Yes?
So I had the pleasure of spending a few days in Atlanta about 5 years ago.
Yep.
And one of our excursions was to CNN. It was a daily excursion. So CNN was built by Ted Turner in an old hotel called, I think it was the Omni.
Okay.
It's still a hotel today. Half of it's CNN and half of it's hotel.
All right.
But they take you to the top floor. You look right in over every news desk.
All right.
First, you walk up to where the cameras and you see the people on camera. And it's almost like a zoo.
Yep.
And so then you walk around a corner and then you can see over the top of the CNN production news desk. And it's filled cubicle, wall to wall, cubicle to cubicle with 20 somethings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm expecting to see old grizzled news guys, right?
I would not have expected that.
But it is a full of, you can see, just out of college kids.
Yep.
And they're running back and forth, you know, giving headlines or whatever they do, creating the production. You go down another floor, and that's headline news.
Right.
And then you go down another floor, and it's CNN Latin.
All right.
And then there was another desk underneath that that they created news from. But somebody asked, well, what about New York? And they said New York is basically the bourgeois production. They have all the headline names there, but the stories are written back in this facility in Atlanta.
All right.
So if you wanted a story, these 20-somethings could scour the Internet, because that's what they were doing, scouring the Internet, finding facts.
All right. Thank you. The U.S. Supreme Court announced Monday it will hear the case of a suburban Denver baker who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple on faith-based grounds. This is the latest religious freedom case to be considered before the Supreme Court. Jack Phillips, owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, had refused to sell a customized cake for a gay couple's union, claiming a religious exemption to the state's anti-discrimination law. State courts ruled against him. The High Court will now decide whether applying Colorado's public accommodations law to compel the baker to create expression, a wedding cake, violates his constitutionally protected Christian beliefs about marriage. Phillips told the Supreme Court he has free speech and religious rights under the First Amendment that should protect him. He said he should not be compelled to bake a cake specifically to honor a same-sex marriage. Colorado's anti-discrimination law, though, protects people on the basis of their sexual orientation. Charlie Craig and David Mullins had filed a complaint against Phillips in his suburban Denver shop after Phillips said he would not create and decorate a cake in honor of their marriage. Colorado did not permit same-sex couples to marry until 2014. 2 years earlier, Craig and Mullins were planning to fly to Massachusetts, where same-sex marriage was legal, and then host a reception in Denver upon their return. They wanted a cake for that occasion. The case will be another in a series of religious liberty disputes the justices have reviewed in recent years and could be an important First Amendment test of the extent anti-discrimination laws apply to gay people. Oral arguments will likely be held beginning in the fall. The case is Masterpiece Cake Shop Limited versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. I'll be fascinated to read what they come up with.
So remember when this was the big thing, mm-hmm. And it's been that much of a backlog for this now to just be getting to the Supreme Court.
Because
I remember that was the big controversy in so many states, whether or not you could stop, and now it's caught up to the Supreme Court. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to rule.
I have no idea.
I guess we don't want to open up that controversy, but if you're doing it for religious reasons, most religions would say, you know what, you got to be treat one another as you'd want to be treated.
I suppose you could say, too, why didn't the two guys just go to another bakery But I suppose they were taking this stand in defense of the belief that they were being discriminated against. And that they felt that the state had laws in place that prevented such discrimination. They didn't get married in there, in Colorado. They got married elsewhere. They came back, and all they did is they want a cake. For all I know, this guy's the go-to guy for a cake in Denver. And they wanted the best cake. And so they go to this guy, and he says, no, I can't do it, fellas. It's even reported he's very polite and is declining, and which will be neither here nor there as the court looks at it. But I'm finding that fascinating.
I'm finding it that the big guy upstairs would have said, you know what, it would have been okay to make the cake.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah.
It just, you know,
that wasn't going to go against that. You got other stuff here that went against you? That wasn't going to go against you to make the cake.
I got an email from Nils who writes, today you mentioned the word conundrum. Here's a couple you might find fun to use. America is capitalist and greedy, yet half the population is subsidized. Half the population is subsidized, yet they think they are victims. They think they are victims, yet their representatives run the government. Their representatives run the government, yet the poor keep getting poorer. The poor keep getting poorer, yet they have things that people in other countries only dream about. They have things that people in other countries only dream about, yet they want America to be more like other countries. Think about it. And that, my friends, pretty much sums up the USA in the 21st century. Makes you wonder who is doing the math. By the way, we are advised not to judge all Muslims by the actions of a few lunatics, but we are encouraged to judge all gun owners by the actions of a few lunatics. Seems we constantly hear about how Social Security is going to run out of money, but we never hear about welfare or food stamps running out of money. What's interesting is the first group worked for their money, but the second didn't. Think about it. Am I the only one missing something? Those are rather fun thoughts, aren't they? Really? Really? You had to do that.
They were, just like, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. You know, America.
Hey.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. I'm pro-America today. America.
You get those callers, direct your social media, and we'll bring in John Haidt with all the news that's fit to broadcast.
Exactly. When Garage Logic returns.
Oh, yeah.
Commencing Garage Logic segment number 8.
John, as is our custom.
Yes.
Eric, go ahead, please.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Say, I think you got to be careful. You're on a slippery slope. What keeps me from going to a halal butcher or to a kosher deli to get all of my bacon?
I don't know, but I'm not on a slippery slope. I'm just fascinated with what the Supreme Court has to take up.
All right. Well, good luck, sir.
All right. Here's John Haidt.
I thought he was doing a joke for a minute there. Yeah, I was like,
going to play the drum again, yeah.
It's sunny and 74 degrees. This update brought to you by the Duluth Trading Company. Visit Duluth Trading Company stores in Fridley, Bloomington, and downtown Duluth. Twins lose to the Red Sox last night in that series opener, and those same two teams tonight at Fenway Park. Hector Santiago off the DL pitches for the Twins. Lefty Drew Pomeranz will pitch for the Red Sox. The Ricky Rubio trade rumors are not going away, not even after the team traded Chris Dunn to Chicago last week. ESPN's Mark Stein reporting that the Wolves remain, in his words, intent on dealing Rubio. NBA sources, he says, told him the Wolves are trying to add more shooting to their lineup. Dunn, the Wolves' first-round pick last year, had been considered the Wolves' point guard of the future before he was sent to the Bulls. Five Eyewitness News weather forecast?
Yeah.
Why did I go there right away?
Okay. Wow, that was quick. You do kind of go Ron Burgundy on it once in a while.
I did there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Old habits. News notes from today.
Go bleep yourself, San Diego.
What is the forecast? Is there a storm tonight?
It's supposed
tomorrow.
To. Yeah, toward morning.
Oh.
Toward, 4 or 5 a.m.
Yeah.
News notes from today. The Stillwater Lift Bridge is stuck in the up position.
Again? Uh-oh.
Crews from Xcel Energy work to repair a power outage. MnDOT says a motor vehicle apparently hit a transformer around noon today and knocked out power in downtown Stillwater. Mayor Ted Kozlowski said the city crews were told that the lift bridge could be stuck in the up position for as much as a day.
Is there a car on it, I wonder?
No, I saw a photo, actually. Mm-hmm.
If it was up, that would mean that there weren't any cars on it.
Oh, I see. I see.
Right.
I thought maybe you could be on it, and all of a sudden you're going up.
But the boats are happy.
Yeah.
An XL spokesperson said it appears as if the power outage, which occurred at 12:20 p.m., is limited to just the bridge. Spokesperson Matt Lidstrom told the Pioneer Press a crew was on its way to the site. Traffic is being detoured to the I-94 crossing in Hudson.
Oh, okay.
Boy, it's getting hard to get around anywhere.
Oh,
it's miserable. When is that bridge going to be done?
That the new one?
Yeah.
Any day now will be the first crossing.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Big ceremony's coming.
Really?
Up. Yeah.
An 80-year-old man required medical attention after reportedly being assaulted by a younger male walking past his property yesterday in St. James, Minnesota. St. James Police Department said the county sheriff's dispatch received a report of a fight between two males. St. James police officers responded and spoke with 80-year-old Pascual Sanchez, who required medical attention. The release said that Sanchez was transported by ambulance to the Mayo Clinic Health System in St. James, later transported by helicopter to North Memorial Medical Center in Robbinsdale. Sanchez told officers a younger male walked by his property as he sat outside in the yard. The two exchanged words, and the suspect continued walking west.
He said, "Get off my lawn."
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And the guy kept going like this. He would put his foot, he would stretch it out and put it on the corner of the lawn.
Apparently, though, a short time later, the suspect returned. That time, Sanchez says, the younger man assaulted him. The matter is currently under investigation. St. James police are asking anyone with info to call the police department.
Well, I'd like to know, what were the words? They had words.
Yeah, John.
They had
words. What were the words being said?
The St. James police press release.
Doesn't provide that.
Doesn't address that, just that they exchanged words.
I wonder who the St. James police press writer is.
Syria has denied White House allegations it may be preparing a new chemical attack, insisting that it has never used such arms. Ali Haider, the Minister for National Reconciliation, told the Associated Press today the White House statement foreshadowed what he called a diplomatic battle that would be waged against Syria in the halls of the United Nations. If you missed it, the White House issued a stern warning to Syrian President Bashar Assad last night, saying it had potential evidence that Syria was getting ready for another chemical weapons attack. In a statement issued with no supporting evidence or further explanation, Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the U.S. had identified potential preparations for another attack. He said the activities were similar to preparations taken before the April 2017 attack that killed dozens of men, women, and children. Several State Department officials typically involved in coordinating those announcements said they were caught off guard by the warning from Spicer. It didn't appear to be discussed in advance with other national security agencies, according to those sources. Typically, the State Department, the Pentagon, and U.S. intelligence agencies would all be consulted before the White House issued a declaration that would go to foreign capitals. At least 34 people hurt after two subway cars of a train derailed today in New York City. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority confirmed that an A train derailed. The Fire Department of New York said at least 34 people suffered non-life-threatening injuries, 17 folks taken to hospitals, though. The MTA tweeted that one C train, one D train, and a third train were evacuated. MTA officials said the train made an emergency stop, which damaged the tracks, signal switches, and the wall next to the train.
Aren't these happening a lot more frequently? We have one of these stories like every 2 months.
Infrastructure, they're not maintaining it.
I think it's inattentive engineering. That was the case with the one, what was it, Johnny, in Pennsylvania?
Philadelphia.
Yeah, that where the guy was, he was texting when he was supposed to be slowing down.
Social media users posted that they were stuck on some of the trains for over an hour until emergency crews came to evacuate them. I would not deal well with that. I'm sorry.
No.
You got a bad waiter on the other side of the glass over there.
Yeah, Joe, you'd handle that pretty well.
No, no, I'm just reading something that's just... The evil of ISIS is incredible. There's
Is this the 8-year-olds, that one?
No, it's the 1-year-old. Apparently Yazidi woman, that's a religious minority, endangered, obviously. She's kept as a sex slave, and they didn't feed her. Then they brought her a meal and told her, "We just cooked your 1-year-old kid, and you just ate him."
Ugh.
How do you fight this? I mean, how do you fight that?
Yeah.
That's beyond the pale.
That is very troubling.
The 8-year-old story was that they have 8-year-old kids committing executions for them.
Oh, good.
Yeah. President Donald Trump blasting CNN as fake news today after three of the network's most prominent journalists resigned over their involvement in a recently retracted story. Trump attacked CNN and other media outlets in a torrent of tweets following the network's acceptance of the journalists' resignations over the Russia-related story. The president then also retweeted a doctored image of CNN's logo made into FNN, or Fake News Network. Regulators in California took a pivotal step yesterday toward becoming the first state to require the popular weed killer Roundup to come with a label warning that it's known to cause cancer. Officials announced that starting July 7th, the weed killer's main ingredient, glyphosate, will appear on a list of California keeps of potentially cancerous chemicals.
I would think any weed killer should be thought of as causing cancer.
Yeah, of course. It's supposed to kill stuff.
Is there a safe weed killer? There probably is. I have no idea.
There are organic ones, I know.
But even though, I suppose the organic ones probably would be okay.
A year later, the listing could come with warning labels on the product. It's not certain, though, whether Roundup will ultimately get a warning label. Monsanto, the chemicals maker, has filed an appeal after losing in court to block the labeling, arguing that Roundup doesn't cause cancer and that the labels would harm the company's business. State health regulators also have to decide if there's a high enough amount of the chemical in Roundup to pose a risk to human health. State officials received more than 13 public comments up to the run-up in this bill.
Remember the old amusement park ride called the Roundup?
I do.
Where you stood up straight and it went around and around.
And then it'd go up.
I can picture it.
Yeah, it would tilt up and then come back down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
Boy, we sound old.
Yep.
You sure do.
It might seem logical that states with the highest prevalence of overweight people would have the highest percentage of hefty pets, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, according to a new report based on the physiques of more than 2.5 million dogs and 500,000 cats in the U.S. In some cases, it found nearly the opposite patterns for people and pets. Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi, which have some of the nation's highest rates of human obesity, all ranked in the bottom five states for overweight or obese cats. Topping the list for chunky dogs and fat cats, mm-hmm. Minnesota, where 41% of dogs and 46% of kittens were rated by veterinarians as overweight or obese.
Would you attend a cat video festival, rookie, of overweight cats? Or is that usually against the...
Well, there'd be a big cat there and a big elf.
What that tells me is people here just spend more money on their pets.
What do you mean? For food and feeding them and not exercising them?
Yeah. Hmm.
Huh? Okay.
In second, I don't get that.
Yeah, they.
Where are the pets the thinnest?
New Jersey.
Alabama?
I just said Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi.
Okay, think of it logically.
Okay.
Those would be areas that would tend to be more impoverished, for example, than many other states, including Minnesota. So the people in Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi have thin pets because they're not wasting their money feeding the pets extravagant meals.
I understand that. But also... I'll give you this. The people that are terribly poor and have those skinny pets probably aren't being part of the survey and bringing their pets to the doctor.
I'm just telling you. Let me just tell you.
I understand your reasoning and that...
Is Garfield from Minnesota?
He's fat.
Yeah. Like lasagna.
Well, thank God this part's over.
Is that done?
Okay.
Cannot stop him. He'll just make a move. Joe Soucheray.
Here's Dave Dahl.
Thank you, Joe. We're up to 74 degrees, heading for a high today of about 78. Partly cloudy skies, thunderstorms developing late tonight toward morning. I think around 4 in the morning, we should see a line of thunderstorms come in from the west. Not terribly severe at this point, but they could have some gusty winds and some small hail. We'll watch it. We have a slim chance that some of those storms could become severe overnight, 62 for the low. Then for tomorrow, some morning thunderstorms, otherwise warm and humid in the afternoon, up to 80. Southwest winds around 5 to 15, dew points probably in the 60s. Thursday, isolated thunderstorms possible. Most of us stay dry and 80 on Thursday. Then Friday and Saturday, it stays in the mid-70s. Pretty good chance for scattered showers and storms both days. Dries out, though, for Sunday and next week. 80 on Sunday and then warmer 82 Monday up to 86 by Tuesday of next week. And it continues to warm after that. The day after the 4th, on the 5th, we could be up close to 90 degrees. 74 out there right now, Joe, heading for a high today of about 78. And those thunderstorms overnight tonight. Right now, we hear the records.
June 27.
104.
104.
In 1934.
In 1934.
44.
44.
In 1925.
In 1925. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Are you guys aware of this new sculpture near the U.S. Bank Stadium?
Which one? The
It explores the effects of climate change on birds. I don't get it.
The effects of climate change on birds.
Yeah.
Why
climate's been changing for a billion years. I suppose birds have accommodated.
Yeah, birds have just gone with the flow because they don't know what the temperature or the climate is supposed to be.
Two unusual sculptures. It's the lead is you want to figure out what Minnesota's next state bird could be? Because right now it's the loon, mm-hmm. right? Two unusual sculptures at the Commons Park in downtown Minneapolis offer a guide on the possibilities as rising temperatures alter the state's climate, which is just merely offered as a fact. What rising temperatures?
Right.
What altered climate? What? It's just offered as a fact, and it's BS. It does. How about the little blue heron? It doesn't live here now, but the art installations, a combination of data and design, point out that in 80 years, it's likely to become a prevalent species. Again, we don't know anything about tomorrow, but right. 80 years from now, you've got people who think they'll know what kind of birds will be here. How do you get yourself into this mess?
That's pure speculation.
But the loon, Minnesota's beloved state bird, will move out of the state as the climate gets warmer.
Well, why? It'll go north, it'll the Hudson go north. Bay?
It'll go norther. It'll go norther. I actually said norther. It'll go more norther.
It will go over norther?
Uh-huh. Named Orbicles, orb for their round shapes and oracle for their predictions, the tower illustrates a tangible outcome of climate change and the way Minnesota's identity could change, said the designers. Birds are a lens on climate, said Mark Swackhammer, head of the University of Minnesota School of Architecture. Well, how does he? He's an architect.
Maybe he's got the gift.
He's also a member of the MinLab Design Collective that conceived and built the project for a contest sponsored by the city of Minneapolis. We used changes in the bird populations to make climate change more understandable. Well, not for me, you haven't. You lost me. The idea, he said, was also inspired by the bird controversy at U.S. Bank Stadium, which looms over the sculptures on the east. This, did I mention I'm reading this from the Tribune?
Mm-hmm. Front page story.
I don't get it. Public money got used for this.
So the city of Minneapolis had a contest.
Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority said the Vikings are spending $300,000 to determine if the stadium's glass walls are fatally invisible to some of the millions of birds that use the river as a migratory flyway. It's evident, Swackhammer said, that a lot of people care about birds. Yeah, I care about birds.
I care about birds, but to
never seen a lot of dead birds crashed into buildings.
No.
The way these people talk, again, you'd be wading knee-deep through them every morning when feathers, you try to get your office.
Feathers would be flying everywhere.
Their fate also fit into the theme of the June 10 Northern Spark Festival, Climate Chaos, People Rising, the Orbicles installation funded by $50,000 from the city. The taxpayers had to pay for some of this. And $60,000 from the U of M. Well, that's public money,
yeah,
too.
That's true.
So that's $111,000. It was the first in a chain of artwork set up along the Green Line rail stops. Swackhammer said it worked. At least on the night of the festival, people paused to study the towers and track what will happen to their favorite species. And then they talked about it.
Wait. Read those. $50,000 from the city of Minneapolis.
And $60,000 from the U of M.
$110,000.
I said. What did I say?
$111,000.
Oh. Well, six.
Not supposed to do math on the year.
Six and five is 11.
Right. So it's $110,000.
That's it. $110,000. You're right. Yeah. You're right. I should not be doing any math whatsoever. I can't finish this.
I was impressed that you did the math.
Then they got numbers on. Never mind.
Why have birds become so important to overly care for? I mean, what's happened in the last 5 years?
You know, I think it's okay. I'll break it down.
Yeah,
for
what I don't understand the we're so worried about birds in the last 5 or 10 years.
I think it's yet another aspect of the mystery, which is attempting to bring about a country that is not America. And one of the ways you do that is completely deplete this country of its wealth and thus its commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Then you wouldn't have any more tall buildings and you wouldn't have any fancy architecture with glass because that would, and they're just using birds as a means to,
because
an attempt to bring that about.
New York City.
It's too late.
It's got buildings everywhere.
Yeah.
The birds adapt.
I've been in New York. I've been there many times.
Okay, Bob.
And I haven't seen, never saw a dead bird.
Piles of dead birds.
Once in a while, a bird will fly into my window, knock himself out.
Yep.
And you can see the little tweety notes above his head.
Right.
And then I go out and pick it up and kind of just get it.
Right.
Yep. And then give him a little lift and off he flies.
Boom. Yeah, that's, and sometimes you get one that doesn't make it.
I can't even tell you the last time that happened, and I'm routinely having birds fly into the windows.
You're like the bird whisperer.
Yep, I am. I if I'm there and I hear it, I go, uh-oh, there's one. Clunk. And I see it laying there, and I go out and I pick it up, and I give it a little, I don't give it mouth to mouth.
I wouldn't do
it.
It
ain't going there.
Yeah, I'll call an ambulance, but I'm not.
No, but I'll give them a little time in my hand to say, come on, let's see if you get your act together here, pal. Boom, let's go.
And they get their wits about them.
Yep.
And off they fly.
Playing golf the other day, saw a bird that was hurt and didn't know what
to do. Close to a birdies you were going to get, huh?
Yes. And I didn't know what the hell to do about it, so I didn't do anything. I just kept playing. See you later. And there's hawks on that golf course, so
I
bet the hawk had himself a little hors d'oeuvre later in the day, if you know what I'm saying.
I think we do.
Anyway, we got sculptures now that cost $110,000, and they're going to tell you what the deal is. Tom Wilson wonders, isn't there a concern that thousands of birds will die flying into this bird sculpture? Say something that the Daily Mail, again, does very well.
Yep.
They have time-lapse photography showing that new battleship aircraft carrier, the Queen Elizabeth, leaving and sailing and trying to get under the bridge and out into the North Sea.
Did you do a 6 feet clearance?
Oh,
6 feet of clearance?
Wonderful. It's just amazing. That's what they do best. But then they also do stuff like, this model wants to have her jaw broken so her chin can be more pointed to look like a superhero. Aren't doctors, why would you find a doctor that would do that?
What about the oath?
I thought it was do no harm.
Well, I guess they're trying to
improve. How do you find a plastic surgeon and go to the plastic surgeon and say, look, I want you to bust up my jaw and turn my chin into a point?
I'd say no. Do all plastic surgeons take that oath as well, or is it just?
I have no idea.
Maybe the plastic surgeons have a loophole. The ones that are just, you know, I'm just here to make the money. I'm not here to do no harm.
Well, it seems to me but that's the dark side of the Daily Mail. They'll give you all the plastic surgery stories.
Right.
1500
right.
ESPN is KSTP St. Paul, Minneapolis. It's 73 and sports is next.